Thanks for tuning in. I'm Alana. With me is the lovely Elizabeth from the Netherlands. We'll talk food and philosophy up next. Elizabeth, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
So you run a YouTube channel called European Kitchen. Tell us about it and what kind of content you make and why you started it.
Well, I started with the cooking channel, you know, just cooking videos, because cooking is just like a hobby of mine. And I thought, you know, most people will be interested in that. But my real interest is more philosophy. So then I switched over to that. Well, I will still do cooking too, but at the moment I'm more into philosophy.
So I have to ask, I know we're not going to talk about cooking, we're going to get into philosophy, but
that's fine too.
What is your favorite dish?
I don't really have one. I guess yeah. It just depends on my mood or on the day or what I ate the day before.
Yeah, exactly. I don't really have that either. The one thing I noticed with a lot of European cooking is we use a lot of wheat, right? We use a lot of flour. Yes. And that's one thing for me. It's hard for me to eat a lot of wheat. So I try and substitute like almond flour or coconut flour. But sometimes it's just not the same. It's not the same as wheat.
Yeah, sometimes. The cooking that I do is not what we used to eat if you go really deep in the past, because we were hunter-gatherers, and they usually eat just what they found in the woods, you know, like meat, berries, nuts. So not per se the things that I'm cooking.
Yeah, that's what I try and stay with, the kind of the caveman, the paleo, you know, paleolithic
diet. So it is the
diet.
Most healthy, I guess, yes.
But sometimes you really crave like some of those floury, doughy things that you make in the pie crust,
yes.
And, you know.
Yes, I've noticed when I only eat, you know, like berries or nuts, I get very hungry. I just feel pretty weak the whole day, so.
Yeah, you have to have some meat. I think meat is definitely, I think Europeans, especially when you live.
So.
Yeah, especially when you live in the north, I mean, they would die if they didn't have meat.
Yes.
They didn't have anything like soy patties back in the old days, you know.
Of course, there's a lot of logic behind it. For me, then, I believe that you should eat meat. But also, just to make it simple, I feel pretty weak when I don't eat these kind of things. So I just listen to my body and then I know, okay, I need that.
I noticed, too, people in Europe, they're not as overweight as America. I know some of the food quality is better, too. You don't have, like, genetically modified foods, maybe some less chemicals and stuff, whereas Americans have become so fat. You know, they're so obese. Why do you think that they're thinner in Europe?
I don't know. I think we do have more emphasis on eating healthy and moving and exercising. It's pretty a mainstream thing. Most people are doing that. And if you don't, you're a bit looked down upon, maybe.
Yeah. And the one thing is America, it's like the extremes. We have whole foods. We have this big organic movement, which is really good, local organic food. And then we have like the worst toxic food you can imagine, stuff that's illegal in Sweden and the Netherlands and stuff, you know.
Yeah, it goes pretty much two ways, I guess, or these extremely healthy people or totally nuts, you know, and I think both extremes. You know, for example, veganism for me, I don't believe so much in that is super healthy. But I know a lot of people do, and it's two extremes, you know, veganism or, McDonald's and things like that.
Jeez. Yeah, it's awful. Yeah. Well, you also get into philosophy, which is kind of newer. You kind of switched pace on your channel, I noticed, over the last couple months. So why did you transition over to, hey, I'm going to do some philosophy videos too?
Well, for me personally, it's not new at all. It's what I, you know, what I'm always busy with in my mind. So I thought, you know, maybe... a lot of YouTube videos or books you have already are pretty long, or the books are, you know, you have to really read for quite some time. But I thought the most important tweaks that you can practically use, I then try to make short videos and explain these things in a way that most people will understand.
Yeah, it's great. I love it. Well, you know, some men, they think it's more masculine for women to be interested in, you know, psychology and philosophy. I disagree. I also think the European mind is very complex, and European women have had a different kind of life altogether. I think women, we can be mothers, and we can have a mind that's curious and philosophical, such as yourself. What do you think? Is it more masculine, or can you be feminine and philosophical?
Well, I think that especially psychology is pretty feminine, actually, because women tend to be occupied, you know, with other people. They find it interesting usually. But I think that the men who think that it isn't okay for women to, you know, use that kind of intellect, that they take feminism or not being feministic the wrong way. They think that not being feministic means that you agree on, that women are somehow intellectually inferior, which is not true, because we have men and women and we fill each other up. It's not that one's intellect is superior over the other. I think we need both, because if nature intended that one of the two would be more superior and more necessary, we would probably have only had one gender instead of two.
It's true. Yeah. It's true. And we have both a masculine and a feminine aspect within us. As women, you can't always be soft and delicate, but being feminine also doesn't mean that you can't be a lioness at times and be fierce and use your mind, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah, when you are being threatened, like in your face, being soft is probably not a good idea. You should probably let it go for a moment, or when your children are being threatened. But I guess that goes without saying, because it runs completely on instinct. Also the stories you hear about women who push cars away in front of their children and things like that. So, of course, we do have a balance within it, yes.
Yeah. And then, of course, feminists, they take it too far, right? They don't have anything feminine left. They're just operating in their very masculine side all the time. Mm-hmm. And you gave a good definition of feminism, which I agree with. So why don't you share that for everyone?
Well, first of all, I do agree with that women should have the right to vote, own property or have inheritance, things like that. But I guess that everything that is an extent of that, it goes beyond that. Yeah, I don't believe so much in that, because I feel like in order to be accepted as a good woman by the masses, you have to be able to hold up with men in their lifestyle. So that means that you have to be more masculine and more aggressive. And for most women, that isn't per se, that it comes very natural to them. They really have to put in a big effort to achieve that. So I think that if feminists don't accept women for what they are, they don't accept them in the first place, and that doesn't seem very pro-women to me.
Yeah, exactly. They have a problem with housewives. They put down women who want to be mothers and raise kids at home like it's something that's less than, that they're a better woman if they're in some corporate job, president, competing with men and bossing men around or something,
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, if you don't accept somebody for what they are, you don't accept them in the first place. So if being, femaleish isn't accepted by people who say that they are completely pro-women, that doesn't add up to me, that doesn't make sense, really.
Now, what do you think is pro-woman? How should it be? I mean, feminism has gone too far, and then we have alt-right versions of femininity. What's the right path for women?
Well, femininity. To me, what is important to everyone, but especially for women, is to act out on your own integrity. So even if you can have some short-term gain by, dropping your integrity for a while, then don't do it. Just stick to it, by being integral towards yourself. And I think then you go in the direction of being feminine. But the interesting thing about it is that when men go more in the direction of having integrity towards themselves, they go more in the direction of masculinity. So, I guess that's pretty universal, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for me, it's also, it goes deeper than that, because I believe that we have like this temporary being, the physical body, but that we also have a more higher being, or the spirit, you could say. And the physical body is mainly concerned with survival, but the spiritual being is more concerned with enlightenment. And I think the more you go in the direction of integrity, the more you also reach enlightenment.
Yeah, being authentic, being true to yourself, living out your true deep desires, basically.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you're familiar with the alt-right, pro-European movement. Any thoughts on how women who are a part of it can really contribute and get this message out there in a feminine way?
Well, I think that, when you want pretty much any message across, when you point out like this and that is all what you're doing wrong, people only hear, only hear the tone of voice in which you say it. So, yeah, you get your own frustrations out, but practically it didn't help much. So I guess it's probably more beneficial to create an alternative and show people what is positive about that. So, yeah. I would recommend people to bring across a message like that.
Yeah, I hear a lot of girls, every girl I bring on, that's basically what she says. So I think
Yeah, really.
it's a good guy should pick up on that. It's a positivity, right? Being positive,
Well,
inspirational.
maybe men are a bit more, you know, this because they see a problem and they want a solution directly.
Sure.
But I think you should know the way how to, because in the end, that just works practically better, I think.
Yeah, you can't just sit around and complain about things. After a while, you have to take action and find ways to solve it. And, you know, you've talked about the importance of being positive. Why is it important to be positive, and how is it different from being in denial?
Well, I think being positive is important because if you don't, your mind can get a bit blurred. You know, you can fall in this pattern, maybe of being a bit paranoid. So practically, you don't help much. But denial is completely something else, because being positive is that you own up to reality how it is, but that you also acknowledge the things that are going well. Now, denial means that you just refuse to own up to reality, but because it's too unpleasant for you. But of course, then you can also not change anything, because yeah, you can change what you say isn't there.
Yeah, exactly. You have to be able to face all the bad stuff around you, but also know what are some things that I can immediately change and improve in my life, and do all those things possible, right? So how do you stay positive in such a negative world? I mean, we Europeans, there's a lot, there's a massive threat facing us as a people. It's very hard. It's very burdensome for people. They get really depressed and down about it, and they feel helpless at times, and they feel like they want to rage. How can you stay positive in such a negative world?
By force yourself to also focus on what is going well. And personally for me, when I get a bit worked up or I don't feel so well, I take a walk in the woods, or I walk around the sea. Just being in nature gives you like this, I don't know, this positive energy.
Yeah, I agree too. And being outside in nature is like the best the best thing. It kind of just cleanses
yes.
you, cleanses everything.
Yes, and you develop all these endorphins. And,
I think the other thing that makes people feel better is doing something about the problems. You know, when
yes,
we actually like organize and say, okay, let's get something done. That's going to be the only thing that's really going to make any of this better and make us feel better.
But for that, you also need to stay focused on what is positive, because if you really feel reality as if everything is bad, then you lose hope. And I think when you lose hope, you don't have any motivation to, you know, to try and change something.
Yeah, exactly. People get in a rut. They get down, and then they get lethargic, and they get nihilistic. And I mean, nihilism is really spreading everywhere in the West. Do you see it a lot in the Netherlands too, amongst a lot of the younger kids? Just that down and out, hopeless feeling.
I don't know much people are like that, but yes, I know that it is there. But I think, you know, being nihilistic, or if you just take a part of it, isn't that bad, because you know, we also don't have to buy all the stuff that we don't need. It's just, you know, I just try to be practical instead of just throwing everything away because that's, you know, fashionable at the moment.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff we don't need. I think Europeans have, maybe less so in Europe, but Americans, they've become so materialistic. So materialistic, and they're always chasing
yes.
the high, the new car, the new clothes, the new house, you know, and they're just empty and miserable, and then they have debts and loans up to here, and oh, it's awful.
Yeah, because they feel like if they all have all that stuff, that they are then more worth somehow. So it's just a substitute of self-worth, I guess.
Yeah, and then they have liberalism come in, this kind of, it's like a religion for people, this, let's get under, you know, go celebrate in the church of diversity and multiculturalism, and it'll give us a reason for living and fill that hole that we have deep inside, right?
Yes. Yeah, I think so.
Now, I know that you're interested in paganism. I don't know any other word choice to use for that. How did you get into it, and what interests you about it?
Well, what I like about it is, when you look at most religions, it works like beginnings, endings, black, white, heaven, hell, like that, which is quite logic, because we as humans, we perceive the world through our brain and senses, and our brain has this need for order, and for that it creates systems, you know, to bring us closure, so beginnings and endings, which, you know, like I said, is quite logic for people. But in paganism, I think it's understood that, yes, we work like that, but also on the other hand, that our perception is quite limited, and that there are cycles in nature more than in a temporary timeline, you know, like if you look at the seasons and things like that. And also that probably the universe is infinite, that black and white is pretty hard to say, you know, if, or more, if something is good or bad, you can better say if something is beneficial or not, because good and bad is very subjective. And what can be good at one side doesn't have to be on the other. So, yeah, rather say beneficial or not beneficial. So, yeah, that's what attracts me into paganism.
So, no, thinking in terms of your everyday life, and this is a question I ask a lot of people, and people say different things, to be a pagan, to embrace paganism, how does that come out in your everyday life or in your thinking?
It comes more in my thinking. I find it's very hard to say, but I think that with every situation that I occur, I try to ask myself, you know, what step should I take? How am I the most integral towards myself? And I think that's very very pagan, because they believe, you know, in honor, or I would call it integrity. And the more you go in the direction of integrity, the more enlightened you become, the more eternal scheme of things. So I guess that's how paganism influences me.
Yeah, it's like the nine noble virtues, right? The nine noble virtues is a good code of ethics to live by. Yes. And we actually had those long before Christianity came to. A lot of people tend to think that our ancestors were just total savages and just had, you know, orgies in the forest and were just eating magic mushrooms all day and just acting like crazy brutes. But they actually had a lot of order, and they had ethics, and they had morals.
Yes. Well, paganism is actually a very logical religion. You know, like the rituals that are in paganism are usually just based on scientific facts, or, you know, they do a lot with plants as medicines, things like that. It's not just some hocus pocus.
Yeah, it's early science, right? Learning about how life happens. And yeah, exactly. Yeah. Even pregnancy and how that works and the maypoles. Exactly. It's all early science. Now, what do you think about a lot of the deities, like the gods and the goddesses, whether it's, you know, Slavic or Norse or Germanic paganism? Do you think that they were real people, or are they archetypes to follow?
Well, I find it a bit complex, you know, to just explain in a couple of sentences, but I think that they are archetypes to follow.
Yeah, I think so too.
Not per se, real people.
Yeah, a good example to follow of things to embrace, good qualities, good attributes. And I think that now we can be able to create our own archetypes too. That's what I'm looking forward to. New archetypes that we need that are appropriate for this era.
Yeah, I guess people always have this need to look up to other people to take, you know, to take their leads. That's quite natural, I guess.
Now, what about gut feelings? You did a video about gut feelings. Is it natural? Why is it important to listen to gut feelings?
Well, a gut feeling is very natural, because it's just, you know, we have our conscious mind and our subconscious mind. Now, what we consciously understand is pretty limited. What we subconsciously understand is much more well-rounded, and it detaches, you know, your subconscious mind detaches pretty much everything that goes around you. And we don't see that directly, because we would be completely overwhelmed. We wouldn't be able to function. But I think that gut feeling is just the subconscious mind seeing it, something as very important, so important that you should consciously directly understand it.
Yeah, exactly. We do pick up on things. There's a body intelligence that we pick up on things. Maybe we don't know, we can't foresee, but it's almost like a psychic sense. Like, you know, looking back, I've had plenty of gut feelings, and a lot of times I'm right, and sometimes I'm like, why didn't I listen to that? I knew my body was telling me these things.
Yeah. I hear people say that all the time. I would always say, you know, trust your gut feeling. Yeah. Of course, you also have that you personally are a bit prejudged, you know, just based on your own experience. For example, when you in the past met somebody you didn't like, and now you meet somebody who looks a bit like them, look, that's probably just a prejudgment. But I think that when you know yourself very well, you can really see which is which, you know, which is true gut feeling and what is not, especially women probably.
Yeah, do you think women have more intuition? We always hear about a woman's intuition, right?
Yeah. I don't think that they per se have more intuition, but I do think that their intuition is better developed, because if you look in the past, men were often gone hunting and women stayed at home with their children or in one place. So they had to be quite keen on what was happening around them in order to prevent maybe potential dangerous situations, because yeah, when such a situation would already occur, they can't really depend on, you know, their muscle power usually. So for women, I guess it's more important than for men, who can depend on their physical strengths to de-escalate or to prevent dangerous situations. So I think that just because we need it more, it's also developed more in us.
I think women are also more internal, obviously. We take more in, we're emotional, whereas guys are very external. Exactly. They were out fighting, they were out hunting. So yeah, it didn't really require intuition, it required force. But yeah, women, we have to pick up on things. We have to sense things.
Yeah.
And I mean, I definitely think women possess more intuition if she's healthy minded. Because that's the other thing, getting your mind healthy, you know, being emotionally in a healthy place.
Yeah, and it's important to be honest to yourself so that you can know yourself well and you know what is what, really. Yeah.
I mean, you seem like a very stable woman, but there's some women that are just too emotional, and then there's some women that are just cut off emotionally altogether. Where do you think is a healthy balance for a woman and her emotions?
I find it hard to say this or that is healthy, but I would just say always, you know, just use some common sense. It's really not that hard. It's probably somewhere in the middle. Yes. I don't really know, because I don't know every single person, a woman personally. But for me, I can just sort of feel when I'm stable in myself, when I'm really in balance. I think that balance is the most important thing, to hold your emotions in line, but also our understand them and not per se repress them.
I think with a woman, it really changes when she meets the guy that she's going to be with. You know, it creates a kind of stability. I think when a woman meets the right match, it really does kind of balance that masculine, feminine aspect. I don't know, is that your experience? Do you feel that?
That's also because the practical usually falls in place. Then, you know, you are more stable. You have your house. You, when you're lucky, you don't have to work. So you are also, you just have more time to focus on your internal goals, really, I guess.
Well, let's switch back to food. So what are some common questions you get from people? Do they ask you about what's healthy? What should I eat? What should I not eat? What can you say?
Yes, they do. And I would recommend everybody to eat what grows naturally in your own region, because you are physically adapted to the climate and the region you live in. And if the food grows there naturally, you are, the food is too. So that's a healthy match.
So what grows locally in the Netherlands there? And don't you guys have a lot of potatoes there?
Yes, we have, but that's actually from South America.
Oh, I mean, yeah, exactly.
So have it already for hundreds of years.
Yeah, exactly. So what would be native in the Netherlands then, I guess?
Well, what works good in a climate like the Netherlands or Germany and such is salads, especially because they don't need very high temperature to grow. For example, tomatoes and stuff, that's a lot harder maybe in South France. They grow a bit better than they do here, because we often here need, I don't know the word in English, but you know, these little houses you can plant vegetables in. They're actually normally grow in a more hotter climate.
Yeah, I noticed too in Sweden, when you talk about eating locally, it would be like moose and elk. There's lots of berries, lots of root vegetables. And that's the thing that I get worried about with the high populations coming into Europe. We won't all be able to eat. We won't all be able to go hunt and get a moose because there's going to be too many people. Does that ever concern you in the Netherlands, thinking about food and how farming?
We already have so many people and so less place. But I think concerning, you know, people and food, people are adapted to the climate. So, you know, where you're originally from, for example, I'm pretty fair-skinned. I really do best in more colder climates, because I'm just not that made for warm weather, you know. I don't have that thick of a skin like, you know, browner people would. But I do can make vitamin D quite fast, like no other people can too. So things like that, I think about it.
Yeah, exactly. Vitamin D is important for very fair-skinned people. I know that's why Swedes, they eat a lot of herring. I really don't like the taste of it, but there's actually a lot of vitamin D in it. So there was a purpose.
Yes, actually vitamin D is important for everybody, no matter where you're from. But for fair people, it's easier to make vitamin D because, you know, the straling, I don't know the English mm-hmm. word, but from the sun comes faster to your skin, and with that it produces vitamin D faster.
So now what are things you tell people absolutely do not eat? What are bad things people shouldn't eat?
Well, I find it hard to tell other people, you know, what they should or shouldn't do. I just try to lead by example, I guess. What they should, yeah, you know, I would say everything that is too much or too less. That's the most all-rounded, simple advice I could give. Don't eat too much or too less, not too much sugar. I believe you can eat some sugar. I never got ill of it. But yeah, I guess the diet you have, so for a lot of Europeans, that is probably good to know what we ate as hunter-gatherers.
Yeah, and also say stay away from chemicals, fake additives, the high fructose corn syrup. Basically, if you don't know what it is or if it's made in a lab, just don't eat it. People need to learn to read labels more. You'll stay healthier, you'll age better, you'll feel better if you cook more from scratch, right? You cook from scratch a lot.
Yes, I do. Yeah, because then I know exactly what I use. And, yeah. But I would recommend anybody to just also listen a bit to your body. If you're really in tune with your body, you know when it's too much or when it's less and what you need and what you don't need.
Exactly.
So that's what I always just, you know, mentally always trust in your gut feeling, and physically, yeah, you also have to be a bit in tune with your body to know and how what.
Yeah, I still love, I know a lot of paleo people are mixed on dairy, some people don't, but I still love raw milk, I love raw mm-hmm. cheese, I love cheese. Cheese is a big part of my diet. I think Europeans, we have a lot of cheeses, right?
Yeah, well, I think if you really have this craving to eat something, probably your body needs it, you know, like, for example, pregnant women, when they want certain meat, then maybe they need, when it's red meat, I believe vitamin B12 or something. So I would always say then just eat that. You know, if your body says that you want it.
Yeah, that's the one thing I love Europeans. We have all these fine meats and cheeses and little snacks. I mean, I love that.
Sometimes. Oh, yes, it's so nice.
Yeah, sometimes that's the best way to eat. You just have a platter of different meats and cheeses, you know. I love that. Yeah. So what dishes are you going to do next? Any idea?
I don't know. I never plan it really. Just when I feel like, oh, I want to eat this today, it would be nice to film, then I just film that. So, well, I have some new cookbooks, so I guess I'll look into that too. But I can't tell you what I will cook next or what I will talk about next. Also with the philosophy things, just something that occurs in my own life. And then I start to think about it. I think, oh, that's probably a tip other people would use too. And then I make a video. It's not very planned.
Yeah, well, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for coming by. I think it's great to connect with you and meet you in person. Oh. So let people know how they can find your YouTube channel. It's just European Kitchen, right?
Well, just type European Kitchen in the search box at YouTube and you'll find me there.
All right. Well, thanks for coming by. We'll have to do this again sometime in the future.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, I would like to.
Be sure to check out European Kitchen on YouTube for recipes from all over Europe. Let's keep the tradition alive. Do it for your health, your family, and your culture. And if you're looking for something to do this weekend, tune into our live TV show Weekend Warrior, available for members at redicemembers.com. Sometimes we take calls and you can chat with fellow members during the show. Your membership helps support our team so we can continue to do interviews, TV segments, and videos. Thank you so much for all your support. We love you guys, and we'll see you next time.